Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Hey everybody, this is the Josh Meister, and welcome back to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. We just got finished watching Season 6, Episode 11, Happily Ever After. Really good episode. It was Desmond-centric, and we're starting to find out an awful lot more about how the series just might end. And so called in tonight, we have somebody who hasn't been here in several episodes, but we're glad to have him back. Alex, also known as Congested from Dark Ufology and audiblylost.com. How's it going tonight, Alex?
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. So do you have any announcements to make about anything that's going on with your Lost documentary project?
Not quite yet, but very shortly, probably in the next month.
Cool. I look forward to hearing more about that. Let's see. Also, Spivvy, Josh from the Lost Flashbacks, is in the chat room and might call in too. And by the way, I apologize to anybody who subscribes to my podcast feed as opposed to listening to it live, because I know the episodes frequently come out a little bit later than I would like them to, as in, like, sometimes the day of the next episode. And I know that makes it difficult to keep up with them, so thanks for your patience on that. But as I was finishing editing the episode, I realized there was one thing, at least one thing that I didn't talk about while we were recording the podcast about the package last week, the episode of the package. Since Charles Widmore has Jin, the Man in Black can't get Jin to leave the island. And so that may foil the Man in Black's plan, because he commented to Claire that he needed to get all the candidates to go with him in order to leave the island. So it seems like we've got at least two challenges to the Man in Black's plan, right? If it's true that he has to get everybody off of the island, then all of the candidates off the island, he doesn't know that Kate is still a candidate, at least according to the lighthouse, because her name is crossed off in the cave. And he can't get to Jin at the moment because Jin is behind the sonic fence, the pylons, where the Man in Black can't get to him. And so, at least for the moment, Jin is out of the way, and the Man in Black doesn't know that Kate is still a candidate, if she is still a candidate, and I presume that that's the case, and that Jacob set that up on purpose. So now we've got yet another obstacle with Jin being taken by Charles Widmore and being kind of out of the picture for him. One other thing, last week I mentioned that Big O, one of my fellow podcasters from the Cranky Fanatic podcast, had a new Lost application, and he actually just came out with yet another one. So the one I talked about before was Lost Answers, which is a trivia game, and he has a new one called Lost Quotes. And this one's much more simple. It's not actually a game, but it's just an application that's got a whole bunch of quotes from various characters from the show. And so you can kind of look through a big list of quotes and relive memories from the show if you want to do that. It's 99 cents, and just search for Lost Quotes in iTunes. It's available for iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad, just like the Lost Answers game. So getting into this episode, it starts out in 2007 on the island. Desmond wakes up, and Zoe is there, and she says that he's been unconscious for 3 days. Charles Widmore is there in the room, and he tells Desmond that he was shot by Benjamin Linus, and then he proceeds to tell Desmond that he brought him back to the island. And you can see Desmond's lip twitching and his like eyebrow like quivering, and he attacks Charles, and he's very unhappy to be back on the island and separated from Penny. This was not something that he wanted to happen. And Charles Widmore tells Des that he was shot by Benjamin Linus. I talked about that. And then Widmore says the island isn't done with you yet, which is the same thing, I believe, if I'm remembering right, that Eloise Hawking said to Desmond in, I can't even remember the name of that station. There was a Dharma station that was off the island.
The lamppost.
Yeah, the lamppost. Right, exactly. And I believe that was the exact same line, or pretty close to it, that Eloise Hawking said to Desmond, the island isn't done with you yet. Am I right?
Yeah, that was in, I think, 316.
Okay. And Gosh, it was really that long ago? I was thinking maybe that was season 4. Wow.
Yeah, that's... no, that was it. It was that episode.
All right. And then I didn't get a chance to look this up yet. As Widmore's folks are talking about, you know, they're getting the equipment working to and for this test that they're going to conduct on Desmond, and they mentioned solenoids. I thought it was a funny word, and it was in the captions, so I actually wrote down like how it was spelled and everything. I'd never heard of solenoids before, but there's a Wikipedia article on what solenoids are if you're interested, and basically it comes from the, is it Greek word, pipe or channel. And it's a three-dimensional coil. In physics, the term solenoid refers to a loop of wire often wrapped around a metallic core. So that's, I guess, the thing that they were talking about, that we saw this big giant thing. Solenoid can produce a magnetic field when an electric current is passed through it. So that's the technical term, I guess, for that big coil that we saw on the show. Just a little fun factoid. I don't know. I thought that was worth mentioning. So Charles Widmore, well, okay. So first of all, they're having trouble like getting this experiment machine working right because they're rushed. Like they didn't expect to bring Desmond here just yet. And so they're trying to get everything together. And in their haste, there's a guy who totally gets fried by the machine. And so when they bring Desmond to this room, he sees that this guy is dead, and then Widmore says, "I'm going to ask you to make a sacrifice," which is so funny because it's like, "Hello, you are sacrificing Desmond," or so it seems. You know, it seems like he was going to kill him. Obviously, that wasn't Charles Widmore's intention, but I mean, based on what we know of the machine, it obviously kills people. So, but. Desmond kind of argues, you know, well, you know, he doesn't want to die. Charles Widmore says, look at all the things I've sacrificed. He's like, I haven't seen, you know, my daughter hates me, and I haven't even seen my own grandson, which is Charlie, Desmond's son, and Desmond and Penny's son. And he's like, look, I've done all of this, you know, I just need you to make a small sacrifice, basically. And I don't know.
Which is a bit funny, because, like, Widmore is the cause of all those things. If he had just been nicer to Desmond from the get-go, he would have still been in touch with his daughter and still, you know, seen his grandson and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know. Maybe at the time, when Charles Widmore first meets Desmond, he doesn't really think much of him. And, I mean, it's not until later that he comes to realize that Desmond is associated with the island in some way. Like, I don't know. You know, I've always thought that Charles Widmore, like, did something to, like, strand Desmond on the island. But now I'm not so sure. I kind of wonder if Desmond kind of came to the island on his own, like, accidentally. And now Charles Widmore realizes that Desmond, there's something, you know, important that Desmond has to do related to the island. He's been on the island. He survived, you know, the hatch implosion. And so now Desmond is important to Charles. But he already had this history with him where they didn't get along and so forth. But, I wonder if Charles Widmore had initially known that Desmond was going to come to the island and play some big role in saving the island. I imagine that Charles Widmore probably would have been nicer to Desmond. But.
Yeah, like poured him a glass of scotch.
Right, exactly. Let's see. Okay, so the sacrifice line. Okay, and then so they turn on the machine. Desmond is just walking around through this electromagnetic field and isn't dying. And then almost the whole rest of the episode is a flash sideways. So we immediately go to, and it was really funny how they started this flash sideways too, because it's like Desmond is, you know, kind of in agony because of whatever this is that's going on. And he's at least panicking, if not in pain. And then all of a sudden it kind of like, I think it kind of zoomed in on Desmond, and then it like zooms out from like the Oceanic logo, and it's, you know, Desmond is standing there in the airport. And so that's kind of how we jump into the Flash sideways. And I guess that was the writer's way of telling us that Desmond was actually seeing all of these events happen, like, in his mind, I guess. We kind of get that from the end of the episode when, you know, Desmond suddenly, you know, he's like, how long was I out? Only a few seconds. And now all of a sudden he's totally willing to go along with Charles Woodmore's plan. He's no longer concerned about, you know, doing what Charles Woodmore asks. And it's because apparently he was reliving this whole Flash sideways. Not only that, but there was this really weird moment. Was it Flashes Before Your Eyes? There was that episode a long time ago. Well, you remember when Desmond used to have these, like, I don't even remember. I mean, they weren't calling it like time travel at the time.
Flashes.
But like, flashes. Yeah, flashes, right. Like his consciousness was traveling back through time, and like he would literally like pass out in one time or the other as his consciousness traveled back between these two versions
in the
of himself.
In the constant.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The constant. That's right. And, it was so weird because like they show, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but at the end of the episode, they show this, they jump back to the Flash sideways after showing Desmond volunteering to help. And then they show kind of a continuation of the Flash sideways that picks up where it left off when Desmond wakes up. And Desmond apparently fainted when Penny shook his hand. And so it's just like, you know, it's like reliving the whole consciousness traveling through time thing all over again. Or at least, you know, somehow in the Flash sideways timeline, something happened to him physically in that timeline. I don't know. I mean, it honestly seems like a consciousness travel thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how else to explain it.
He seems aware in both timelines of the other timeline. They didn't quite do a, like, complete, like, parent trap switch and, you know, one is pretending to be in another timeline, but it's almost to that stage. It's like he seems to, like, have an agenda in each timeline and be aware of the other timeline in each one.
Yeah, it's very weird. So in any case, so we start out with the Flash sideways. Desmond talks to Claire after Flight 815. And offers to give her a ride, and she turns him down, as we already know, because she takes the taxi, and that's where she runs into Kate and all that kind of stuff. Desmond guesses that Claire is having a boy, which is interesting because obviously, you know, he knew that in the alternate timeline. And so that was kind of the first hint that maybe he had some knowledge from the other timeline. But then George Minkowski is there at the airport. He's the one who picks up Desmond and offers to take him to his hotel. Desmond asks him to go to the office instead. It turns out Desmond was in Australia because we wondered, you know, when we saw Desmond on Oceanic 815 and when we first saw that in the Flash sideways, it's like, what? You know, why was Desmond on 815 in the Flash sideways? It's so weird. But apparently he was in Australia to seal a deal for his boss. And he's the boss's right-hand man. Minkowski points out that Desmond doesn't have a wedding ring, and Desmond says that he's not interested in companionship. So obviously at this point in the episode, we know he doesn't know about Penny, or at least isn't in a relationship with her.
Yeah.
And if I could jump
in here with Big O's big theory, his big theory is that the way Minkowski will be able to get the manifest is because he has connections to Cindy, who is one of his prostitutes, because, of course, Minkowski is a pimp. So it's like he connected it all there, and that's the big theory.
Oh, no. had to go there. No, but it's true though that Cindy, you know, Chandler probably in this Flash sideways timeline, she probably does still have some connection to Woodmore. And so, yeah, for no other reason, that part does make sense that maybe Cindy could get it. Let's see. And Josh, Spivey is called in too. Did you have a comment, Josh?
Yeah, the stuff with Desmond and Widmore throughout the whole episode was so interesting that in this timeline they're friends and he respects him. And, you know, you remember back to I guess it was in flashes when you first see, you know, when he went to go get the job for Widmore. And if you remember, he got the job. Widmore was like, hey, you know, we'll put you in this area. And then he was like, well, I'm not actually here for that. I'm here to ask your permission to ask your daughter to marry me. And that's when, you know, Charles Widmore kind of got upset and poured him the scotch and was like, hey, you know, this glass has more than you could make in a month. You know, you're not, you could never, you know, you could never have my daughter. So
right.
You wonder if in this timeline, if he, you know, went to get that job, but Penny wasn't there. He didn't ask him that. So he got the job, and because Desmond, you know, was very cool, moved up in the ranks, and now his, you know, his right-hand man. And
and
then they moved to L.A.
Yeah, for some reason.
Right. Well, I think that was just for the convenience. I mean, they can kind of take some liberties in the Flash Sideways, you know, but on the other hand, actually maybe the reason for that is because that's where his family lives. I mean, that's where Eloise Hawking is, and that's where, you know, Dan and Penny apparently are. So
I think it goes back to the whole LAX thing, and I think that maybe the title of the premiere is actually a bigger clue than we think, that because it's like LAX, and it's like they're all in LA this time. All of them are there. Rose, who lives in New York, she lives there. You know what I mean? Like everyone lives in LA or is in LA at the moment.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I just had a thought about something later. We'll get to later in the episode, but okay. Let's see here. Right. So yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about maybe that's how Desmond became the right-hand man. That was an interesting point about that too. So Desmond walks into the boss's office, and lo and behold, it's Charles Widmore. And they greet each other by first name and with big smiles and a hug. So obviously totally different relationship than in the original timeline. Charles says that his son, who we can guess at this point in the episode is probably Daniel Faraday that he's talking about, is a musician. Charles asks Desmond to babysit Charlie Pace for Mrs. Widmore. And so we could kind of guess at that point in the episode also that Charles is still married to Eloise Hawking, but actually Eloise Widmore is what she's going to go by, obviously, in the Flash Sideways. Charles offers his 60-year-old scotch to Des and says, nothing's too good for you. So total opposite of original timeline. Charlie explains, so basically what happens is Charlie was going to perform with Daniel. Daniel's a musician, so Charlie and Driveshaft are going to perform with Daniel, and this was all something that Mrs. Widmore had, you know, been asking for or whatever. And so Mr. Widmore is trying to get Desmond to get to kind of babysit Charlie Pace, to kind of be there when he gets bailed out of prison, and to take him with him and bring him to this party or fundraiser or whatever it was, gathering that they had planned. And so Charlie, he walks across the street and there's all these cars honking. He doesn't even look like at any of these cars. It's like he's totally like mental or something. I don't know what's going on in his head, but it was totally reminiscent. I mean, you've got like Desmond like watching, like going, oh my gosh, like what's he doing, and following after him. And it reminded me of course, you know, how Desmond saved Charlie's life over and over and over again. And I thought, oh great, this is totally going to be that again, you know, like there's going to be this whole course correction thing, and he's going to try to save Charlie a bunch of times. And, well, he did save Charlie at least once, in this episode. So, that wasn't too far off, but, let's see. So Charlie walks across the street to this bar. And Desmond meets, you know, talks to him in the bar, and Charlie starts telling this elaborate story about, you know, apparently he wasn't trying to commit suicide on the plane. That's kind of what it looked like happened, but apparently Charlie had just tried to swallow his heroin to hide the evidence from the marshal, because he saw the marshal on the plane, and he knew he was going to get busted, or at least he thought he was going to, and so he was trying to hide the evidence by swallowing the heroin, and that's when the plane hit turbulence and it got lodged in his throat, and so he choked on it and almost died. Well, while he was in this near-death state, before Jack saved his life and got him busted, basically, for having the heroin, Charlie says that he saw Claire kind of in his mind and also on the plane. And just as he was about to die, he felt like they had always been together, like they'd always been in love. And Charlie says to Desmond, "I've seen the truth." So this is really weird. This is like the strongest to date, or at least to this point in the episode, of any indication that these people in the Flash sideways, all of the main characters that we've seen, they keep having these weird moments. They're seeing reflections, or they're just looking at things that are going on or objects that remind them of the original timeline. Like, they're having these weird deja vu moments, or so it seems. Well, now, apparently, from what Charlie's relating with his near-death experience, it's maybe much more than just, you know, brief periods of deja vu that they're happening. They're actually, at least in some cases, seeing things in their mind, and, like, kind of playing out this whole... It's not just a feeling of deja vu, but they're actually, at least in some cases, seeing things happening that remind them of the original timeline, which is really interesting. Soon after that, Desmond convinces Charlie to go with him. Charlie jerks the steering wheel as they're driving, and the car goes into water, which, by the way... totally ridiculous because I mean, I'm like, okay, so Desmond like starts flooring it. Like he would be hitting the brakes. Like what the heck? Why, you know, I mean, it's not like Charlie had his foot on the accelerator. He was on the opposite side of the car, you know, but you know,
it was one of those like educational driving, like, oh, you know, driving class cars.
who knows? I'm sure, I mean, obviously, this was, when you write that in the plot of the episode, like when the writers are putting it together, it's something totally different from when the directors are, you know, shooting the scene. And I mean, I'm sure that the director was just doing that, I mean, to make it dramatic, but you know, and I'm sure the writers didn't write down, you know, Desmond puts his foot on the accelerator and they go careening at top speed into the water, you know. Anyway, I won't complain about that anymore. But so they go into the water and it's like, okay, what the heck? Like Charlie is totally suicidal. And Charlie's still in the car. He's not getting out. He's making no effort to get out. Desmond gets out of the car. He goes up for air. He goes down to get Charlie. And Charlie kind of puts his hand up against the glass. And Desmond has this crazy flash moment of not Penny's boat being written on Charlie's hand before Charlie dies in the original timeline. He sees this like vividly in his hand, not Penny's boat, so vividly that he specifically even remembers the phrase. After saving Charlie's life, you know, talking to him later, he asks about Penny. And so, I mean, this is a very vivid flash that he's getting. It's not just some, you know, tiny little bit of deja vu. This is really cool because now we've with Charlie, we heard more about what kind of experiences they're having. And now with Desmond, we've actually seen what kind of experience that they're having. And, I don't know. I thought it was pretty amazing. Like, it's really cool to kind of see how all of this is coming together. We've only gotten tiny hints at this so far. And so it's really cool to kind of see that all this play out now.
Yeah, that was a pretty amazing moment right then.
You know, I'm convinced that Charlie, I wouldn't call Charlie exactly suicidal, because if you want to kill yourself, there are a lot faster and easier ways. I think he just wanted to, with a car anyway, feel what he felt again on the airplane, and also let Desmond feel the same thing. I mean, I think it has something
right.
to do with trauma or bringing yourself close to death.
Well, yeah, although as my wife pointed out, though, because I was thinking the same thing, right? Like, he may not really want to, like, kill himself, but he's putting himself in near-death experiences so that he can have another vision of Claire. And at the same time, though, I mean, later in the episode, Daniel Faraday, or Daniel Widmore, says that he was just like walking through the museum and saw, we can assume, Charlotte, and had this, you know, like he knew he loved her and all this kind of stuff. So there was no near-death experience in that particular event. Also, Desmond in the hospital. The next thing that I wrote down in my notes is Desmond's at the hospital. He goes into this MRI machine. And by the way, of course, the person, the hospital worker who's like helping him get into the machine, hands him this little box with a button on it, and he says to push the button if he wants to get out. Like, and Desmond kind of like, he has this weird, like, push the button, you know, it's like almost another kind of, that seemed to be more of a deja vu. But then he gets in the machine and he, again, not a near death experience, but he has these flashes of, Charlie Pace, Penny, his son Charlie, all of these things he's seeing as, you know, as though he has direct memories from the original timeline. Very, very vivid in his mind. And so now he knows exactly what Charlie was talking about, with, you know, having this flash where he knows he loves this person and all this. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Josh. Was there anything else you wanted to say about that?
No, I mean, pretty good. I got my comment.
Okay.
And then you summed up.
Sorry, say that again.
And then you summed it up pretty good.
Okay, thanks. So Charlie says, so when basically Desmond has to go find Charlie. It's really stupid, by the way, because just before this, he was saying to the nurse, you know, I need to find the man that I came in here with. And she's like, you're not going anywhere until, you know, we check out your head. It's like, okay, come on. Like, they wouldn't let him see Charlie. anyway. But when he finally so he's looking for Charlie after being in his experience with the MRI machine. He's looking for him. He runs into Jack, and then Charlie, you know, runs by in his hospital gown, and Desmond runs after him, and they have this conversation. Charlie says, none of this matters. All that matters is that we felt it. And he tells Desmond, start looking for Penny. So, you know, he knows Penny's name because Desmond asks him, like, who's Penny? And Charlie doesn't know. But he says, so start looking for Penny. Charlie knows exactly what's going on with Desmond because he's experienced it himself with Claire and his memories. Meanwhile, basically, Desmond calls Charles Widmore and says, look, you know, Charlie got away. And he says, well, you know, Charles Widmore says, you're going to have to talk to my wife then and explain to her why you couldn't get drive shaft after all. And so Desmond does that. He goes to talk to Eloise Widmore, and she's okay with it. She says, what happened happened, which, of course, is an oft-repeated phrase. Remark on the show, and she's totally okay with it. And then Desmond, as he's walking away, he thinks he hears the name Penny being read aloud from the guest list, and so he wants to look at the guest list. Eloise forbids him from seeing it, and she pulls Desmond aside and kind of tells everyone else to back off. You know, she needs a private moment with Desmond, and she totally turns into Eloise Hawking again. I mean, the way that she's talking to Desmond, she totally knows, like, what's going on. She knows a lot about Desmond, apparently, and what's going on in his head. She knows exactly what's happening, or so it seems, anyway. And let's see. Alex, earlier before we started recording, you said in the chat, well, what gets me, as we discussed on Big O, is how does she know so well or so much about Desmond specifically, less in this one and more in Flashes Before Your Eyes. Obviously, she knows about the alt split because she knew an alternate Dan came and blew the bomb up. So yeah. You brought up a lot of points there. So that's a really good point to bring up. Eloise Widmore, I should say, knows that her son, Daniel Faraday, came back to her, you know, in whatever year that was, in one of the flashes. And
77, yeah.
was that 70? Yeah.
Wait, okay. The Dan went to, well, Dan first met Eloise in 54, but then she helped him get to the bomb, she literally got him the bomb in 77 to create the split.
Oh yeah, that's right. Okay, so in any case, so that Eloise has this memory of all of this that happened with Dan. She knows that that was her son, and obviously, I mean, she has the son, you know, he's alive now in this timeline, and so presumably, if, you know, maybe this is what caused Eloise to start investigating, to start researching time travel theory, and why she's such a master in all of this. You know, fortunately, she has a mind that can comprehend it all, but I kind of wonder, though, I mean, because it sort of seems like, especially in Flashes Before Your Eyes, in that episode, she really seemed to be like a master of time and space. I remember using that phrase because in Room 23, one of the backwards talking things is, only fools are enslaved by time and space. And that was shortly before that episode, Flashes Before Your Eyes. And so I was thinking, okay, well, Eloise Hawking apparently is a master of time and space. She totally knows what's going on. And so it's, I don't know, it's very weird to see how much Eloise Hawking knows. Like, I agree with you on that level. It's kind of weird. It's almost as though she's a time traveler herself, or even an alternate dimension traveler. Like, she knows, like, all these things that are happening. She knows an awful lot of information beyond what you might guess that she would know or have. But
yeah, I think part of that is definitely influenced just based off the fact that she was around before it happened. But obviously she knows, so was Widmore, but he definitely doesn't seem to have whatever she has.
Right. Let's see. And also, Josh, maybe you mentioned, and how could she know about Desmond, and could she know about Desmond from what she was told by the Losties? Like, maybe that's how she knows about Desmond in this parallel timeline. Yeah. I don't know.
Basically, what I was trying to say, I didn't write it as well as I should have, I guess. But I mean, she was told all this stuff that, you know, I don't know if they told her specifically, but we know that they know, so we can assume that, you know, they told her a little bit more. That the reason they had to blow up the Swan was, you know, because of Desmond. That Desmond would someday not push the button and the plane would crash. So if she knows that, she can be like, you know, in the Flashes Before Your Eyes timeline, she tells, no, Desmond, you have to go to that island.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's how this has to go down. You know, you do.
I know how she knows it from the journal, because she picks up Dan's journal right. And Dan had all of that in his journal.
Okay, yeah,
Desmond.
All that information from. Cool.
In fact, didn't Dan even write in the journal that Desmond Hume is his constant?
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So
that would explain how she knew it in the regular timeline in Flashes Before Your Eyes as well. Like how she was like, no. You're not, you know, or no, that's not when she said it, but she said, you're supposed to push that button, you know.
Yeah, in that timeline, she was trying to, you know, break him and Penny up and, you know, say, no, you don't buy the ring now, you have a second
right,
thought.
How did she know that? That's different, because that wouldn't have been, the Losties wouldn't have known and wouldn't have been in the journal, because it's such a personal thing, you know.
Well, yeah, that's true. I don't know. I mean, that whole scene, I guess we're going to have to rewatch that scene. Because now Flashes Before Your Eyes, I mean, may mean a lot more to rewatch like that, those whole scenes again. So yeah. We're going to have to rewatch Flashes.
It'd be cool if someone cut together like both of Desmond's encounters with her. You know what I mean? Like in mm-hmm. both of these episodes.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Okay, rewatch Flashes Before Your Eyes. I'm making a note to go watch that episode again. okay, so is that all we want to talk about regarding, like, Eloise Widmore / Hawking for now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good for me.
Okay, so Daniel Widmore, a.k.a. Daniel Faraday in the original timeline, catches Desmond before he leaves and says he needs to talk to him. Of course, Desmond presumes that he's going to be talking, you know, kind of like angry that he couldn't get Charlie Pace there and all that. But Dan tells Desmond about his first experience seeing Charlotte at the museum. And it's just like the experience that Charlie described and that Desmond seemed to have when he was in the MRI machine, where, he sort of saw this person in almost as though it was in his memories and knew that he loved that person. It's so funny too, by the way, that like all three of these people like have had somebody that they loved that they knew in the alternate timeline who's like, you know, also a main character. And, you know, these are all men who are thinking of like a woman that they love from the alternate timeline. It's kind of funny how that all has worked out. But so Dan pulls out his journal and he shows Desmond these sketches, which he did not recognize. He knew that he wrote them. Like, he woke up from a dream or something like that, I think he said, in the middle of the night, and just wrote a bunch of stuff down. And then when he looked at it, he didn't understand any of it. He took it to, I can't remember where, like some professor or something like that. And the professor said, this is quantum mechanics. And like, you know, somebody would have to have like a lifetime's worth of knowledge of quantum mechanics in order to write these equations and things like that. And so Dan knows that something is really, really wacko, because he's a musician in this timeline. He's just a musician. He has no idea what any of this means. And so Daniel kind of does some research on it, and he and Desmond are talking. They almost kind of come to the conclusion the only way to stop it is to set off a nuclear bomb. Then Dan says, I think I already did. And so he's kind of figured out that that was the problem, is that he created a rift. I don't know how he came to figure that out, but in any case, he seems to have figured out that that's what happened. That's what caused this rift, was this hydrogen bomb that went off in the original timeline. And so to kind of convince Desmond of all of the things that he's saying, he tells Desmond, he asks him, why did you ask my mother about a woman named Penny? It happened to you too, didn't it? You felt it. And he says, yes, you do. You felt love. And Desmond says, she's an idea. And Dan says, no, Mr. Hume, she's my half-sister, and I can tell you exactly where and when you can find her. So this is kind of interesting. I'm not sure we ever, like, knew exactly, like, whether they were full brother and sister or half brother and sister. Did we know that?
We figured it out.
Yeah, but we don't know who Penny's mother is then, right?
Right, we don't know who her mother is.
Eloise and Penny meet, and I forget which episode, but and
the variable.
Yeah, sounds right. So I mean, we just assumed, like, we were never told, but I think we just assumed that.
Just by the fact that like Penny doesn't recognize Eloise, like, is that why we're assuming that?
Themselves, and it wasn't. I mean, you would hope it wasn't the way a mother would say hello to her child.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's true.
Sort of cold as Eloise Hawkins.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know. So, I'm curious who Penny's mother is.
Yeah.
And, yeah, who knows? I don't know if that mystery will ever be shown on the
Margot
show. Whether, oh, no.
Claire, like, sister removed, and, like gets really complicated then.
Oh, man, that would be extremely complicated.
And it's Jack's mom.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all related, man. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Be perfect. That'd be great. That's my crackpot theory of the Josh Meister podcast.
Okay, so Alex's crackpot theory. It's going to be Margot Shepherd. I'm writing this down. So if it does turn out to be true, you will be totally vindicated, and you can laugh at all of us. Yeah, there you go. I don't have an Apollo bar to give you, but.
It's all right.
Somebody can give you an Apollo bar.
I actually have an Apollo bar.
Do you keep it in your freezer?
Actually, wow. Where? It's in a box somewhere. There's like four or five of them.
Oh, wow. That's cool. All right. So, moving on from the crackpot theory. Penny is running on the stairs in the stadium. Totally, I mean... This may even be the same stadium where Jack and Desmond originally met. Desmond walks over and introduces himself, says, hello, I'm Desmond. He shakes hands with Penny and immediately wakes up on the island. And so back on the island, Desmond totally willingly volunteers to help. And Zoe is all confused, and Desmond is like walking off, you know, with Zoe and a couple of other Widmore henchmen. And Saeed pops up out of nowhere and murders, you know, these other Widmore men, and points a gun at Zoe, doesn't kill her. I mean, even though he just murdered a parent, well, I assume he murdered them. It sure looked like he killed them, these two other people. And he lets Zoe go. I'm like, what? Like, what? Why not kill Zoe? I mean, I guess Zoe is kind of a recurring character on the show, and I don't know. Maybe they need her for something still, but come on. Come on, Saeed.
Anyway. Maybe there's like a zombie. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
I was kind of hoping you would kill her. I'm getting a little sick of her.
So anyway, so Zoe runs off, follows Saeed's order to run off. And so Saeed tells Desmond that I can't remember exactly what he says. Something like, you know, these people are bad. You need to come with me, right? Something to that effect. And the weird thing is that Desmond like totally goes along with it. He's like, okay. It's like, whoa, what just happened? Because Desmond totally like volunteered to help Widmore. He's totally on Widmore's side, and now he's going to follow Saeed. Like, this must be part of Widmore's plan. This has got to be part of Charles Widmore's plan. Because otherwise, why in the world would Desmond like walk off with Saeed?
The way I read that scene was a lot like the way I read the one where Claire is like, oh, we got to go, you know. Oh, no, the whole thing with Kate. She was saying that, you know, Kate, you know, whatever. And Jin just went along with it to just whatever he had to do to keep her happy, because it was clearly she was crazy. And I kind of read it the same way here.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. But, I mean, I'm judging totally just by Desmond's reaction. Like, to me, it didn't feel like that was his reaction. It almost felt like, maybe not exactly that he expected it, but he didn't really seem that surprised to see Saeed, for one thing. And he just walks off with him. I mean, he's like, okay. Like, he doesn't question, he doesn't say, how do you know that, or anything. He, you know, or how have you been, even. I mean, he just, like, Saeed comes up, kills a couple people, and Desmond's like, okay. I don't know.
Seemed very efficient, almost. That, you know, he knew what was going to happen next. You know, like,
yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it too. So you just pasted a few screenshots in the chat. This is from getlostpodcastmedia.com, and these are some of the sketches from Daniel's journal. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, and these are, you know, he's written sketches where he's got a graph of like real time, timeline, motion, space-time interval, object at light speed, and space-time invariance. There are all these things written on it, and kind of these diagrams that he's got written out in his journal. So cool. Thanks for that. So I'll put those in the show notes for anyone who wants to see those things. Okay. So getting back to the episode, that's about all we get with like the Desmond and Saeed story. And then we kind of get to the continuation of the flash sideways in the last few moments of the show. Desmond, this is when we find out that Desmond fainted when Penny shook his hand. So again, it's like, I guess Desmond's consciousness is traveling through time again. And then Penny says, have we met before? So it seems as though she's at least having a deja vu moment, if not the full on, you know, like memories of Desmond. And Desmond invites Penny to go for a coffee. Desmond walks back, you know, she says, yeah, I'll meet you there in an hour at this coffee shop. Desmond goes back to the limo and asks George Minkowski for the flight manifest and says, I just need to show them something. And so what that is, I don't know. Alex, you had a theory about this. Do you want to explain your theory?
Oh, no, but it's a joke. But it's that Desmond wants the manifest because everybody's name on the manifest forms a giant anagram that he's going to show them, which explains that they're on an alternate timeline.
Yes. So it's a joke theory, but
yes.
Yes.
Anyway, it's not as funny now somehow.
All right. So, and then we were also talking earlier, someone mentioned that, was it when we were recording? I don't remember whether we talked about this beforehand or during the podcast, but Cindy could perhaps get the flight manifest because of her connections with Widmore. But what exactly he wants it for, I don't know. I mean, he says, I just need to show them something. But is he trying to, like, round them up? And this totally reminds me of this, like, terrible movie that I saw.
what was it called?
I'm trying to think what it was. It was something that was on Netflix streaming a while back. This is totally going to drive me crazy until I find it. Hey, give me just a sec. I'm going to see if I can find it here. Okay, yeah, this is it. It's called Passengers, and it stars Anne Hathaway.
I mean,
parts of the plot seem like a total ripoff of Lost, you know? Like, there's this plane that crashes, you know, and there's all these mysterious things that happen. I don't want to give away the plot for anybody, but it is still available on Netflix as a streaming movie if anyone wants to see this.
I'll be watching this.
It's kind of bad. It's kind of terrible, in fact. I don't know. Like, it was somewhat entertaining, but yeah. Anyway, it's sort of a psychological thriller. I mean, I don't want to give too much away, so I can't really say too much about what I'm thinking of related to this episode. Basically, there's this plane crash, and this the main character is this therapist who's, like, trying to work with all of these people who were on the plane that crashed, and she's trying to, like, to pull them all together. And then there's this weird, you know, plot twist, of course, that happens after that. But
polar bear?
Not a polar bear. That would have been better, in fact. I would have probably enjoyed the movie more if it had been a polar bear, but no. Anyway, you'll just have to see it. Not that I'm recommending the movie. Again, it's probably not even worth watching. But I mean, it's something to laugh at. Like, if you want to see a movie where you can kind of laugh and go, oh my gosh, they totally tried to rip off Lost, and look what a terrible, terrible movie this was, then you might enjoy it for those kind of reasons. But anyway, so it's called Passengers, stars Anne Hathaway. That's all I'm going to say about that. But I don't know, it just sort of reminded me of that because of Desmond, like, asking for the flight manifest and, like, trying to round up all of the passengers who are in this plane crash. I'm like, what? You know? Oh, please don't let this be Passengers. Okay. Okay. And let me see if I've got anything else in my notes here. So Jenny Lynn earlier said in the chat, we were talking before we started recording about the mirrors and reflections and things like that. So according to Jenny Lynn's recollection, Jack, Kate, and Son, there was a mirror. In Sawyer's Flash Sideways, he broke a mirror, you know, so there's, again, a mirror reflection. There was Jin, Saeed, and Desmond, there was a reflection. Ben, reflection. John, Jenny Lynn says, I can't remember, I think a mirror. I don't know. Does anyone remember for sure what it was with the lock Flash Sideways? Or did he have a full Flash Sideways? Because I know we saw him in Ben's, but did he have... No, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, it was the episode... Wasn't it the episode where we saw that weird boy in the jungle? Was that the same episode?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm.
Yeah, it was the substitute.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, the substitute... No, but there was a full... There was a whole episode where that was, like, lock-centric. Oh, no, yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. No, it is the substitute. Yeah. I was thinking that the substitute was the episode, the Ben Linus episode, but no, that was a different episode. Was that Dr. Linus? Is that what they called the episode?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right. I got confused because the Flash Sideways kind of connect in those two episodes. Like, we see the two, like, interacting with each other, but anyway. All right. Yeah, thanks for...
Come on, Josh. Set your game up. It's the last season here.
I know. Well, see, that's part of the problem,
too. What's going on?
It's like, well, part of the thing is, like, I haven't had a chance to review any of these episodes yet. Like, I think there's only been one episode this season that I've had a chance to watch again. And I'm, like, taking notes, like, during the episodes, and I don't know. Hey, it's been right. 11 episodes already. Give me a break. Like, that's a lot to remember.
All right, all right. You get a pass.
All right.
Locke was reflected in a mirror.
Okay.
I'm looking at the picture now. It looks like he's in a bathroom or something, and it's like one of those small shaving mirrors.
Oh, okay.
Reflected in.
Okay, let's see here. Did you talk about this when we were recording, Alex, about your whole flash sideways theory about the cork doesn't exist and all that kind of stuff? I don't think we talked about that after we started recording, did we?
No, I don't think we did.
All right, so I'm gonna let you explain this, and because okay. you can probably, or I'll just read like what I wrote in my notes, and then you can add to it. How's that?
All right. Yeah.
Okay. So this is what Alex was kind of explaining before we started recording about this is a really interesting theory. I couldn't find anything off the top of my head that directly like contradicted this, so it's plausible, I think. But the theory is that in the flash sideways. So the cork doesn't exist, right? The island is the cork, according to Jacob. The cork doesn't exist because the island is sunk, right? It got blown up or whatever. So the smoke monster perhaps has freedom in this alternate timeline, in the flash sideways timeline. He wants there to be just one timeline and not the one that they're in now, meaning the 2007 timeline. And that explains why Widmore says that they will cease to exist. Everyone they know will cease to exist if the smoke monster gets his way, because the smoke monster wants to eradicate the timeline that we've known for all of these seasons, the one that they're currently in 2007 on the island. He wants to eradicate that timeline to end the world and only exist then in the flash sideways, where he'll be happy because Jacob is presumably dead. The island, you know, is sunk, and so maybe he's free. The only problem that I have with that theory is that it seems to me that if the Man in Black was free, I would guess that he'd be probably causing a lot of destruction and... I don't know. I mean, kind of the way that they've talked before, it sort of sounds like the Man in Black, if he was to be let free, well, the way Isabella put it, you know, todos nos vamos al infierno, right? Like, we're all going to die. We're all going to go to hell, even. And it's more than just dying, but they're all going to go to hell if the Man in Black gets off the island. So it's like, I don't know. And I don't know. What does Isabella know? I don't know. She's just a dead person. But maybe she has some insights that we don't have.
Well, yeah, and Juliet also, as she was dying or moving towards death, seemed to gain awareness of the other timeline as well.
Right. And I still hope that we see that scene where she's talking to Sawyer and says we should go Dutch or whatever, but... I bring that up all the time because it's like, come on, like they've got to show that, or else that was totally lame to have that scene, you know. But anyway,
that'd be pretty cool.
I thought for a brief moment in this episode at the end, like when they go back to the flash sideways after Desmond fainted and he's talking with Penny, like she asks, "Have we met before?" And then so they talk about going out for coffee, and I was just waiting for that line. I'm like, that would be weird for it to happen here, but maybe that's where they'll put in that line. I'm like, maybe Juliet, when she was dying, either was channeling Penny Widmore, or maybe when they finally get to the coffee shop, that's when we'll see Sawyer and Juliet there in the coffee shop, and she'll say something about going Dutch. Like, maybe it'll be almost in the background. I don't know.
That would have been awesome. That would have been very cool.
Maybe I should be waiting for that. Cause I mean, like, I don't know. We've had a lot of people come back, honestly. Like, Penny Widmore came back. She's on Flash Sideways, or what is that stupid other show? I'm sorry. Flash Forward. Sure. I was called it Flash Sideways. Because the name is a total ripoff from Lost. Anyway, so Penny, the actress who plays Penny Widmore, Sonia Walder, and also the actor who plays Charlie Pace, Dominic, I always forget his correct pronunciation, his last name, Monahan. And so the two of them are both on Flash Forward, which I haven't watched yet. It may be a great show for all I know. I don't know. But they're both on that show, and I thought that was so funny to see an advertisement for Flash Forward, like in the middle of Lost, where we see two characters who are on this week's episode of Lost, you know, and they're like in this episode of Flash Forward that they're advertising, and that was so weird. But in any case, I can't remember where I was going with all of this. So did you have anything else about the theory about Man in Black wanting to eradicate one of the timelines?
I would say not really. I think you more than covered it. Yeah.
Okay. Also, you mentioned that maybe the normal timeline is kind of like Jacob's timeline, like, and the Flash Sideways is the Man in Black's timeline, the one that they prefer. In the alternate timeline, the Man in Black is free from Jacob because Jacob's presumably dead and all the candidates are not able to be on the island. And so therefore there's nobody, since Jacob's not there, none of the candidates are there, nobody's holding him back. So I guess that's the end of that theory, but
yeah.
Okay. Anybody have anything else that we want to discuss before we get into view for next week? I don't really have too much in the way of spoilers, just preview. And there wasn't a whole lot that I wrote down, but anything else?
I didn't see the preview, but there is one thing I'll say, because this is probably going to be my last chance. Well, maybe not, but just in case it is my last chance, I just want to say, yeah, thank you for, you know, all the great years of Lost podcasting, and yeah, thanks for having me on the show, and I am going to tune out for the preview, but it's okay. Been good.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Alex. I really appreciate it. You've been, I would almost say, a great asset to the show. I don't want, you know, to imply that you're a thing, like an asset, but you know, that's not what I'm trying to get at. I'm really bad at this. I don't know. It's so sad because this is like the last episode that you're going to be on. So it's all starting to end.
It's ending.
The world is crumbling beneath my feet. Yeah. Well, anyway, I hope to, possibly see you in person, in the not too distant future. If we can work all that kind of stuff out, then, of course, you know, and with the documentary and all that kind of stuff, you know, I'll definitely put something up in the podcast feed about that. Even if it's well after Lost is over, I'll definitely put an announcement about that out there for people. So, yeah, so keep me posted on that. I want to hear about that.
No, believe me, you will be well informed.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Alex.
All right. Thanks. See you.
Bye. All right. Spivvy, still here?
Yep.
All right. So, I might need your help if you watched the preview, because I took notes as kind of as quickly as I could, but I didn't. There were only a couple of lines that I was able to catch.
I haven't been watching them.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe people in the chat. I'm trying to re-log into the chat. Once again, TalkShoe is giving me major issues here, but if I can get back into the chat, then if anyone in the chat also has other things they remember from the, feel free to shout them out in the chat too. Sorry, go ahead, Spivvy. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No. I mean, just I know who the episode is about and I know what it's called. That's about it.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about that after the preview. So.
And in the chat, it looks like another person wants to come on the line. So I don't know if they saw that.
Okay.
Really tough.
Okay. Yeah. Just a moment. And then, okay. So these are the two notes that I wrote down. So, we saw, apparently it's a Hurley centric episode, it seems. And, Michael says to Hurley, people are going to die and it's going to be your fault. And Hurley says to Jack, I know what we need to do. Trust me, Jack. So, this is crazy. Like, Michael is coming back as an apparition, like, to talk to Hurley and to talk him out of doing something because supposedly people are going to die because of whatever it is that Hurley is planning to do or put in motion. Really weird. Thanks for calling in and for participating tonight. Spivvy, again, thanks for coming and talking about it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's cool to get a few different takes on the episode.
Absolutely. One more thing. I think somebody wanted to say the title of next week's episode.
Oh, yeah. It's Everyone Loves Hugo.
Everyone Loves Hugo. Is it everyone or everybody? Anyway. All right. So we'll see you next week. Until then, stay lost and namaste. If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. www.thebigfootmedia.com. Thank you, and namaste.